He put the mecha in Draft Mecha. He made Roto World kind of cool for a while, and he put the Gleam in the RSP. So we have none other than Bo Jackson, Mr. Eric Stoner, one of my favorite guests that I've had on my RSP film rooms in the past, and who wrote for the RSP. Eric, it's a pleasure to get a chance to talk ball with you.
Hey, Matt, thank you for having me on. I'm loving this podcast series that you're doing. It gives me something to listen to on my long drives commuting around Los Angeles. So thank you for having me on, man.
Hey, man, it's my pleasure. You know, it's you know, Eric doesn't do much writing anymore, but I know he gets a chance to do a little bit of podcasting with some of his buddies, like, you know, Justice Mosqueda and Charles McDonald. I've seen some, listen to some of those shows in the past year. But you know, when it comes to somebody that I really enjoy getting a chance to talk about the game with and learn from them and get a chance to hear their insights, Eric is definitely at the top of the list. So, you know, this should be fun today. What we're going to talk about is kind of an extension of things that we've chatted about off and on, just kind of off the air. And I think where we're going to start is just the state of quarterbacking. And you brought something up that just made me kind of laugh and think, I wish I could kind of curse in this episode, but kind of an F yeah moment for this was you kind of thought, you know, everyone seems to be talking about this is going to be the golden era of quarterbacking, like that it's already came upon us and that it's such a rich thing. And now the NFL has all these really good quarterbacks now. And you're kind of like, not so fast. So why should we not be jumping to that thought?
Well, I mean, obviously the Mount Rushmore guys are getting older. Brady and Breeze and Rivers, they all say that they're going to play forever, but the end will eventually come to that. But as far as like the new rising crop, I mean, the last one that we had was the 2012 draft when you had Luck, you had Russell Wilson, you had RG3, and you had Tannehill. I mean, and after their rookie season, and I think it was Cam the year before them, and Dalton had played well as a rookie. So, I mean, we've already kind of been in this situation before, and we see how fast things can derail. And everything looks good right now. I mean, especially with this, I think this rookie class is very, very talented. I'm sure that there's already coronations going on in the preseason. But, I mean, I'm old enough to remember, like, back to last season when DeShone Kizer was, you know, all world. and that came crashing back down to earth very fast. So, I mean, there's important things to glean from the preseason. There's exciting things about, you know, a bunch of these young quarterbacks. But until you really see them go through crisis and have to deal with, like, true crisis management, then you don't really know what you have.
Yeah, and what are some of those crisis management things that you would list off for people to understand, you know, these are the litmus tests that they haven't seen yet in the preseason?
Well, no, I mean, in the preseason, you're talking about simulation football. I mean, there's important things that you can glean from the preseason, but I mean, ultimately, like, the coaches are putting these guys out there because they're doing like basic game planning and stuff like that. They're not showing everything, but more than anything, they're just trying to get specific looks out of guys. Like I still see a lot of funny tweets that get passed along to me and stuff like that. Like people complaining about coaches not going for it on 4th and 1 from their own 40 in the preseason. And it's like, dude, they want to look at their punt team. You know what I mean? Their punt team has not seen live reps yet. They want to take a look at that. It's not crazy that they're not trying to, you know, show every single thing that they've got in the playbook, you know, in the first game of the preseason. It's not that big of a deal. Guys like Mike Zimmer he's not going to play completely vanilla. He's going to throw some blitzes and some looks at you. And like Mike Zimmer is like a perfect coach that you want to play in the preseason because, like I said, he's not going to throw everything at you, but he's going to give you real looks.
Yeah, he's going to give you the double A. He's going to fake some of the double A gap, and he's going to – yeah, exactly. So what are some things during the regular season that you'll be looking for in terms of, you know, whether it's blitzes or coverage changes or things like that that you could kind of say, you know, if someone listening to you right now is saying, well, what is a litmus test for a quarterback in crisis management? What are some things that you would see during the regular season that you go, oh, okay, he looks pretty good there. That's notable. You know, what are some of those things that you would mention or list off the top of your head?
The first one I think would be red zone production, because in the red zone, really everything that's happening between the 20s, Justice and I talk about this all the time. You're talking about really simulation football. You have the entire length of the field to work with, down in distance. You can kind of control what looks the defenses gives you, like by what formations you run, and what personnel groupings you put out there. But once you get into the red zone and the field becomes compressed, and the advantage goes to the defense because they just have much less space to cover, everything happens much faster. The windows that you're working with are much smaller. You don't really have as much, unless you're a true improviser, you don't really have time to just sit back there and wait for guys to come open. So the red zone specifically is a very chaotic portion of the field. And you learn a lot about quarterbacks by their red zone production and their red zone decision making. Another area, and this is going to be, you can look at it with numbers or anything like that, or even when you're watching a game, you can get a feel for it live. When, I mean, coaches and players themselves, you're not always going to be in ideal situations. So when you're seeing like an offense really sputtering out on first and second down and facing a lot of third and longs, like eventually you want to be able to see a quarterback convert some plays that he's not supposed to.
Yeah.
Plays where everything, like where, like I said, the offense is controlling the tempo and they're controlling the looks that the defense is giving them by personnel and formation groupings. And they know, like I said, you can control whether a defense is going to roll down and run single high against your trips, and you got a tight end on the other side. Like, you can do things to control what looks the defense is going to give you. But once you get into third and long, like, I mean, you can just see it in production in third and long numbers league wide. I mean, other than Carson Wentz having his crazy year last year, right, third and long is not an advantageous situation for your offense. The defense knows you're passing. And so eventually you are going to have to convert some plays that quite frankly, like, you're not supposed to.
Yeah. And I think that those are great points, because in that red zone, it's like you see somebody like Paxton Lynch is a good example of a good college quarterback who had enough athletic ability to buy time, and he had that big arm. And at Memphis, he could buy time in the red zone and get away with it and make some big plays, and everybody's like, ooh, ah, you know. And then he goes to Denver and he tries to do that, and it just doesn't fly. And you can see the difference even between he and Chad Kelly, where Kelly is very decisive when it comes to the red zone. He's basically, you know, trying to fit that ball in there as soon as he sees an opening, where Lynch, for a couple of years, you could still see him making the error of trying to buy more time than was really possible, because he was used to being that big time athlete as opposed to being that big time technician and tactician that he should be at an NFL level, because his athletic ability doesn't fly like that. And then, you know, what you mentioned about scheme, you know, I mean, there are going to be times where defenses go, okay, I know that this quarterback's good against zone. Now I'm going to do some blitzing against him and create man situations, or just make it look like zone, and then switch it up, you know, switch it up very late pre-snap and show him a blitz look that may distract his attention from understanding that we're about to switch to man. And then he drops back thinking it's zone and suddenly sees it's man, and he freezes. His brain just freezes because now he has to think, and he didn't see the indicators that the way that, you know, seasoned veterans often do, is being able to read the differences, or have seen things that are hybrid coverages that you don't see a lot of in college, which are the combinations of, you know, where they play zone on one side, man on the other, or they play zone in one area of the field and man on another, and they disguise it to make it look one way. And you assume, well, if it's zone on this side, then it must be zone on the other side. And then you're completely confused and you end up throwing into a man look. So, you know, I think those are things that definitely make a lot of sense. Let's talk about, you know, some of the guys who, you know, some of these rookies and what you think, you know, how you think they're doing and what you want to see from them that you haven't thus far with this, you know, simulation of the preseason. And let's start off with Josh Allen. 'Cause you know, people are talking about that big arm. He's, you know, I think we saw this coming, that he was probably going to be shoehorned into the starting lineup by season's end, even if they were going to put him on third team, because I think, you know, part of it, my conspiracy theorist part of it is, oh, well, you know, people were kind of down on him and saying that he's kind of raw in certain areas. Let's start him from the third team and just show everybody that he's worked his way up. But I still think he's got a ways to go here. What do you think?
Well, I mean, the bar to clear of the quarterbacks that he's quote unquote competing with is not a particularly high bar. Everybody knew going into the season, like you said, that this is clearly the worst quarterback situation in the league right now. And the Bills specifically as an organization, they're probably like the number one example that people would use of a team that feel like probably they feel good about their quarterback situation right now, but you can see how it could go really hairy very quickly for them. I mean, what Josh Allen can and can't do is very clear. If you've watched him in college, if you've watched him, you know, little practice clips of him, what his skill set and what he can and what he can't do, very, very apparent. The question is going to be, and like I said, this goes back to what I was talking about before, is how is he going to really manage moments and situations of crisis? Yeah. And he's going to get thrown into the fire very, very early. It's clear that he's going to be a day one starter. Their offensive line situation is terrible. LeSean McCoy is still one of the best backs in the league. But again, like, the offensive line situation is very, very, very concerning. Kelvin Benjamin is his best pass-catching weapon. I mean, and like I said, eventually it's going to be 3rd and 7, and all those veterans are going to be looking at him in the huddle and saying, all right, kid, it's time to see you really make a play and get us out of a situation, out of a bad situation that, you know, us ourselves are not capable of getting out of, or the coaches are not capable of getting us out of this. And I mean, until we see that happen, it's very, very difficult to say. You would like to see, I mean, he's clearly a guy that would probably benefit from a lot more time getting to sit and digest how the NFL game works and just the facets of being a professional. I mean, I think that would be actually the most concerning thing with me, not anything to do with his skill set or anything else like that, is who is he learning to be a professional quarterback from?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
because this is the same Kaiser situation as last year.
Exactly. And I was actually just about to bring it around to that. The best addition that the Browns could have made for Baker Mayfield is Tyrod Taylor. And that dude he's going to get gigs, you know, for years and years and years going on. He's going to get like the Josh McCown gig, you know, for as long as he wants to do it from now on. There probably hasn't been a bigger winner from Hard Knocks between him and Jarvis Landry. And that team needed that. They needed people to come in and show them how to be professional football players. I mean, going back, you brought up Paxton Lynch. I mean, the whispers of him has always been off field. And I think that it's kind of a hard thing for a lot of people. I mean, we know that quarterback is a demanding position, but I don't think that, especially in the draft process, we aren't really in tune and don't know how many of these guys are ready for, you know, ready to have a big boy job.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's really it's one of those deals where you always hear people say, oh yeah, I work hard. I know what hard work is, 'cause this is what, you know, what I do. And if you really have had a big boy job before, you can kind of see who's faking the funk and who really, really does know the value of a grind. And young guys, you know, it's a maturity thing as well. I mean, sometimes, and then sometimes too, it's a puff piece thing. You know, sometimes it's about an executive really wanting that player and not really understanding what his employees who've done all the hard work to research this guy, he doesn't want to know or doesn't care to know whether this guy may have an issue or not. He just is looking what's on the field, what his friends may say. I mean, it sounds ridiculous, but you have a lot of these guys as owners who are kind of robber barons who, when you think of, you know, the way that they conduct their business with the NFL, it's kind of a play thing for them. So, or they're used to running everything and they just think they know better. And it's a situation where, I mean, they do it with coaches all the time. You know, who's the coach you want to hire? You know, they say to their GM, GM's like, a seasoned GM knows this whole game. He's like, what I'd like to tell the coach is there's a guy from, you know, Eastern Colorado School of the Mines who's doing like really innovative work. But if I tell him that, he's going to look at me and go, no, really, who are you going to hire? Because we're not getting some podunk coach that ESPN has never heard of, because all my friends who, you know, my business associates are going to make fun of me, you know, about this. And I don't know who he is. And, you know, whatever Lewis Riddick or Colin Cowherd had to say about it, I'm going to, you know, and no offense to Lewis Riddick, you know, I mean, he's certainly a knowledgeable guy, but, you know, they're going to look at one source who's in the media, who's got the loudest platform, and they're going to talk about that. And the same thing goes with quarterbacking to an extent. So, yeah, I mean, I think that when you look at a guy like Allen, and then with Kizer, you know, as a good example, I mean, Kizer, we still don't know how he may turn out, but I mean, he's getting a second reprieve here, you know, in a sense, to be able to work with Aaron Rodgers and, or at least watch Aaron Rodgers and learn and have some time taken. And Josh Allen just doesn't have that at all. So, I mean, I'm worried about the same things as you in terms of his ability to, you know, he can buy time, but he'll try to fit balls into areas that he shouldn't. You think of the worst of Jameis Winston, and you're going to see even worse things from Josh Allen at times that are along those lines. I mean, Jameis Winston, just this past weekend, throwing the football into a sea of hands for Chris Godwin in a red zone play. Now, he said he saw a flag on the field, but I can count at least, you know, five or six other situations over the past few years where he's done the same thing and there were no flags anywhere to be found. I think Josh Allen is going to have to learn to break some certain habits. And when stress is applied, that's when you really see the true personality of the quarterback and what they do really well and what they need to work on. So how about Baker Mayfield? Because you're the guy I often joke with about when I'm on the air saying, you know, you brought up to me, he can't throw the post, so I'm not sure what's going to happen there. And we've talked about his flaws with, you know, against tight man coverage. What do you think? What have you seen thus far that you've liked? What are some things that do you still need to see those tests that we saw maybe at Georgia where he faltered? We still need to see some of that, don't we?
Absolutely. And I think here's where the preseason can be good. And what's encouraging for him is that it's clear that the game is not too big for him. If that makes, like, I know that's kind of a general phrase, but the game so far does not seem to be moving too, it's not too big for him. It's not moving too fast for him. So that is encouraging. But yeah, I mean, until we really see him, like I said, with live bullets flying, with a defense that's actually prepared to stop him, that's game planning specifically for him and what he does well and what he doesn't well. I mean, and that's the biggest thing, is a lot of quarterbacks can play well early until defenses get a beat on them. And then honestly, when, especially for rookie quarterbacks, like NFL defensive coordinators don't, a lot of them won't even feel the need to get like that crazy and exotic. They'll just line up in the same thing and run it over and over and over until the quarterback or the offense has an answer to stop it. I mean, you saw that happen to Jared Goff under Jeff Fisher. Like, yeah. once defenses realized that their offensive line in Gurley was not really a threat to them at all, and that that's what they were going to try to do anyways, and then throw from third and long. NFL defenses were like, all right, well, we're just going to run cover one and run blitz them first down through third down until they have an answer for it, because they're not going to be able to run block it. They're not going to be able to pass block it on third and long, and they got nobody that can get open versus our cover one. So, I mean, bad teams would run cover one against them, bad defenses. So,
yeah,
I mean, that's the kind of stuff that happens to you in your rookie season, and that's not happening to you in the preseason, if you understand, if you know what I mean. Yeah. So like I said, until we really see those bullets, I mean, and it even goes the other way too. Like, there's guys, I remember how bad Cam Newton and Kaepernick were, like, in their early preseason, in Cam's first preseason specifically. And I think that was, because they were in the same class, right? So yeah, it was both of their rookie years, and they were both abysmal. Kaepernick didn't really play at all his first year, but Cam went out and I think set the most records for passing yards. He threw like for 450 against Arizona in week one. So, I mean, as long as the game's not looking too big or too fast for him, but you got to look at it on the other side too. Like,
it's
not
real
football, you know, it's a glorified scrimmage.
What would you do against Mayfield, or what would you want to do against Mayfield based on what you've seen thus far, just to test him, whether he fails or not, or succeeds? What is something that you would want to see against him to see if, you know, to test him?
I think what you would want to do, and I think it's going to be a similar answer to what you see a lot of teams are, because I assume that when, I don't really know how Haley is going to use him. I know that, like, they tried to do a lot of RPO stuff with Kaiser last year. So I don't know, but I don't know how their offensive philosophy is going to be different with Haley there. There's a lot of chefs in that kitchen.
Yeah. So to speak. I think Hugh Jackson is really just a maitre d' who has a chef's hat on, but he's basically, they said, just sit in the corner and just look official. But yeah. I don't know.
Not for him. Not a winner of Hard Knocks. Hasn't been a great showing for him. But yeah, I mean, so assuming that they're going to try to play to Baker's strengths and kind of do some of the stuff they did last year, go very RPO heavy. That's the in vogue thing right now. I mean, what I think you're going to see a lot of defense is how you're going to see him try to defend it. Is you're going to see him lock up with man coverage, force the give on early downs, try to stop the run, and make these teams try to patiently run the ball down the field until you can get a good down and distance situation with them, and then you lock them up in two man.
Okay, good. So what about Josh Rosen? What do you think about what's going on with him? I mean, he had, we watched him, you know, it looked like he was running for his life in the first game. In the second game, the offensive line seemed to be a little bit better for him at least, and you saw some nice throws out of him. But, you know, anything new for you about him, or kind of just like, hey, look, same guy I saw on tape, and, you know, do you think he plays at all this year? Or, I mean, we know Sam Bradford, obviously, with his, you know, being somewhat brittle as he is, but what's your outlook for him?
I have not seen him other than like random video clips. So I saw his touchdown to Kirk, I think it was, in the red zone, which was that's the kind of stuff that I know that Baker's had a couple of nice red zone pass, like touchdown passes too. So those are really good plays and nice plays to take away. Cause like I said, that's a chaotic, you know, very fast moving area of the field. But other than that, I don't really have a lot of insight. I haven't really, you know, I haven't seen the dude play in preseason, so I don't have anything new to give other than I'm assuming that he will play at some point this year, unless, you know, there's a miracle and Sam Bradford stays healthy. But, they're kind of handling the situation that how you would want them to. They have a vet that they can kind of throw out there to the wolves. And, you know, I would assume that their plan going forward, especially with how DJ's been hurt, and, you know, Rosen hasn't exactly had like the cleanest bill of health throughout his career. So I would assume that their highest priority is going to be rebuilding that offensive line as quickly as possible.
Yeah. And I think that's fair. You know,
yeah. And if they can do that, then he's going to, I feel pretty good that he's going to be a pretty good NFL player.
Yeah, I'm feeling the same way with you. And I love the Bradford move there, because I think Rosen has a lot in common with Sam Bradford in terms of what they did well when Bradford is healthy enough, and what Bradford looked like coming out of college. So Bradford's seen enough systems and seen enough in the NFL in a variety of situations that he can impart a lot to a kid like Rosen. So I think that this is a really good mentor-mentee situation among the several mentors that I'm sure Rosen has had throughout his years. On the other hand, you know, you look at that and say, well, that's a good relationship, but Lamar Jackson and Joe Flacco is, you know, it seemed like that Flacco kind of was like that guy trying to hang on to his job. That's like, kid, you're going to have to earn everything on your own. I'm not helping you one bit. What that's the perception, at least. I'm sure that there's got to be a friendlier level of working together, you know, in camp, but who knows? What do you, you know, have you gotten a chance to see anything of Jackson or Sam Darnold, also who was in a, you know, and more in a comfy Sam Bradford like situation with two good, you know, veteran quarterbacks probably to help him out. But any thoughts on either of those guys?
Darnold specifically, like, he's kind of similar to Baker, where it's like the game is not looking too big or too fast for him yet, but he's just one of nothing about what he does, like, looks not even like aesthetically pleasing. Like, everything's just, I think the phrase that you called it is just very get or done with him. I mean, like, I think he's a better throwing talent than Blake, but it's he's like very much like a smaller version of that, where he's mobile and he can move and everything. But just everything that he does looks ugly, but he's got better. He does have better control of the ball than Blake. I will give him that.
Okay. Okay, cool. So let's talk about some of these young vets who everyone's kind of like, this is why we're feeling pretty good about the quarterback situation in the NFL. Who's someone that you feel like out of these guys, like Mariota and Winston, Carr, Wentz, Goff, Watson, who are any of those guys that I mentioned, or someone else who you feel is like, they're for real? Like, I'm good. You can coronate him. We can move on.
Out of all of the young guys, Wentz and Goff, I think, have a chance of being really, really good players for a long time. I think you have, and a lot of the reason is situation. You have, you probably could not ask for two better situations for a young quarterback to come into, the synergy that they have with their coaches. I think that they're both too, like, they're both of their production increased so much last year, and that's with both of them too being still like flawed, incomplete players at this point. Yeah. So I think that there's still those two guys, really, I think, like, as good as they were last year, there's still another level for them to unlock. And I think that they're both going to be really good for a long time. Garoppolo is a little bit older than all these guys, but I mean, Shanahan he's kind of unlocked the quarterback skeleton key, I guess. I mean, you kind of look at, you know, Matt Ryan's MVP year was such an anomaly from every, I mean, Matt Ryan has always been like a solid to good quarterback, like a top anywhere. Like, you could say he's like anywhere from top 15 to top 8 throughout his career. And the type of season that he had under that dude was just absolutely wild. So, I mean, Garoppolo is kind of, he's another guy, like, I still want to see him under crisis, because, I mean, I know that San Francisco was not that great of a team last year. They didn't have a lot of, offensive weapons or anything, but they also didn't have the burden of expectations that they're going to have going into this year. I mean, this goes for all three of those guys. Like, they all truly do have the burden of expectation now. And I mean, NFL defenses are going to adjust to what they've seen from these guys. Wentz specifically, because I know that I talked about the Eagles, like, they're a great organization. They have great synergy between, you know, quarterback, head coach, front office, everything. But I guess the one question that I would have about them. I mean, this probably doesn't have too much to do with Wentz specifically, but I guess it would be for their overall outlook this year, is when Lane Johnson was talking about Belichick and saying that, like, you know, we'd rather be over here and have fun and win one Super Bowl than be over there and be miserable and win five. So you have your Super Bowl now, so...
Now what?
Are we setting new goals? Like, or is this just kind of, you know, this is our, you know, our coast year. You know what I mean? Like, so it's going to be, I mean, and he's coming off of injury too. So I think that they're going to, I mean, there's going to be a step back for them this year for sure. But all three of those guys, I think that, I mean, like I said, Wentz and Goff specifically, I think there's another level for those guys to unlock.
Yeah. So let me ask you this.
Go ahead.
Before you go on to Dak, let me ask you about Wentz, because you showed me, you know, you compiled a 3rd-and-7 plus tape of Wentz, and it was interesting to me watching that, you know, because you could see how the offense adjusted, the coaching staff adjusted to Wentz's strengths, you know, by about second or third game. And then the looks that they were getting were just fantastic for a 3rd-and-7 plus. I mean, they were like easy decisions compared to what he was dealing with before. He was able to identify what was the best first step, you know, first route to look at. And oftentimes it was open compared to what he had before. And now I think about, and then when things didn't work out well, you know, he had the great legs to be able to run around and find a guy open. He seemed to be better throwing deep when he was on the move and creating, where a receiver didn't have to catch a pinpoint pass. He could just get behind the defense. Now he's going to probably be dealing with some lateral issues with his leg at this point. So, I mean, how concerned are you about this year for him? I mean, it seems like he's kind of trying to force his way in. I know that everyone says he's ready, but I'm watching some of those practice tapes and I'm like, that doesn't look all that good.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a challenge because he's very much a player that's reliant on his improvisational skills and his ability to buy time. I mean, the young Ben Roethlisberger comparison is very apt. And when you take that layer of mobility away from his game, you saw them try to do this with him in his rookie year and the first couple of weeks of the season, where they tried to really run like the old Kansas City and Philadelphia Eagles, Andy Reid rhythm, you know, under center rhythm and passing, dink and dunk. And obviously that it's good. It was good coaching on them to be able to switch their philosophy kind of on the fly and go with Wentz's strengths. But like you're saying, is we don't know if those strengths are going to be strengths, especially early in the season. And your move to naturally want to protect him is to stay out of plays where he's going to need to buy time and, you know, rely on his lateral quickness, get the ball out fast, have a rhythm and timing passing game more than a improvisational one. So, I mean, when you add all that, this year overall might be a step back for him from a statistical point of view, and even in terms of how people might look at his outlook going forward, because if he has bad outcomes or whatever, it's going to affect the perception of his progression. But being forced to play this specific way might act it like being it's like kind of being forced to almost like
right, left hand.
Like if you're a boxer and you got to switch stances and like box southpaw now, like
yes,
it's going to be like I said, it'll be challenging for him, and it probably the outcomes of it won't be great, but it might be a good thing in terms of his overall progression and like I said, unlocking. Even though he might not ever be great at it, he will probably get better at it than they would have if they would have just relied on what they like. The things that he was successful with in his stretch last year.
That makes total sense. Cause I mean, there's going to be some crying on the pillow at night, but he's going to be like, I have no choice. I either give up
is painful.
Yes, exactly. So you were mentioning Dak Prescott, another good guy to mention. So what were you going to say about him?
He, I'm going to, like, I know I brought up Bortles as a comparison for Darnold, and I'm going to do just because I'm so familiar with the Jags, but the problem that Dak has right now is a very, it's kind of similar, but it's the opposite problem. Like with Jacksonville, when Blake, before they had Fournette, they had to throw the ball a lot because their run game was not bad. He had a very productive season doing it, and he has two very, very unproductive seasons playing that specific style, his first year and his third year. But his specific problem was that really any time the defense felt comfortable running a too high look, where they really had, I mean, because Jacksonville would try to run the ball and they just wouldn't be able to do it. And they were a really heavy 11 personnel team. So teams just kind of got content. We're like, we never really have to roll a safety down against this guy. And when that's the case, like he really doesn't know what to do. He doesn't know what to do against a too high look. Like, and that, I mean, you could halfway into that third season, it was obvious to me, like they're going to draft Leonard Fournette because they need to transform this offense to where they can run heavy base sets, pull safeties down into the box and get cover three looks and throw shallow crosses and hooks and play action. And that is what Dak was successful doing his rookie year, because I mean, the looks that they got what caught a lot of people off guard too is that, I mean, with Tony Romo, they were either they were heavy under center, and when they needed to pass, they would go into shotgun. With Dak, you actually saw Dallas like expand their offensive philosophy and start running, you know, a lot of pistol, a lot more exotic run game concepts. I mean, the outside zone and inside zone was still their bread and butter, but the formation looks and what they could do with play action and two back sets and, you know, playing out of the pistol, was teams were not ready for that team specifically. And with Zeke coming in out of shape last year and being suspended for part of the season, I mean, teams and they kind of had some offensive line injuries and issues for the first time last year. You saw teams start get more comfortable not running so much. All right, we just got to run cover three and cover one and run blitz them because, you know, we have to stop this run game. You saw the looks getting a little bit more complex. Their offense didn't really change from 2016 to 2017. They were still kind of doing the same stuff. I mean, you want to have an offensive identity in your bread and butter, but I mean, when you have everybody coming back and they're young players like that, you want to keep fleshing that stuff out and adding more and more and more. And you just, like I said, as teams did not fear the run game as much, you saw more too high looks and they weren't able to capitalize. I mean, he's a good example of a guy like, if you can't throw the post and defenses aren't worried about it and they're not worried about your run game, you're kind of hosed.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you see someone like Mahomes right off the bat, you know, handle too high just fine.
Yeah. That's terrifying as a defensive coordinator.
Exactly. Exactly. So that's those are great points. And it's funny that you mention, you know, that situation. I mean, I think that, no, you look at teams and you do want to see that growth and playing, just figuring out how to match things up with your personnel. Like you would think after your first year, go, okay, here's what my tight ends do well. Here's what they don't do so well. Here's what my wide receiver does really well. What can we do to create around that to make them even better, or like to just maximize what those skills are? So what about, you know, who else on the, you know, who are people that of these young vets like Mariota, Winston, Carr, Watson, that you're looking at them and thinking, I'm not so sure. Like what are some things that you're like, you can talk about what you like about them, but it sounds like that if I mentioned all those guys and you mentioned, you know, Garoppolo, Prescott, Wentz, and Goff, I'm kind of presuming that you're not so sure about the rest of that crew.
Watson, I think, is if everything's okay with his knees and that checks out, I think that dude's going to be, I actually probably should have brought him up like with the first group, because I think that dude's going to be, he's going to be a star. Yeah. It's just going to be with him, it's going to be health. Winston, even if he's good and plays lights out, like as the situation that he's put himself, I mean, what's the best course of action for the organization to take? Like, even if he plays good and lights out, like, are you going to do anything besides let him play out his fifth year option and then walk? I mean, are you really going to bring this dude back, pay him significant amounts of money? I mean, like I said, it's the question I brought up earlier is which of these dudes is ready for a big boy job? And I'm that dude was not ready for a big boy job.
I can think of jobs that he was ready for, but none of them are probably very, complimentary at this point after what we've seen from him thus far, you know, but he would be very charismatic. He is certainly that.
For sure. And the thing is too, is like outside of him, I mean, his suspension is going to play a factor into this, but he's probably going to be walking into like a chaotic situation. Their schedule is horrific to start the season out while he's, I mean, he's probably, he could, Dirk Cutter is a favorite to be like the first coach fired. I don't know if he's a favorite in Vegas, but like among football analysts, he seems to be the favorite. They're not going to start the season out well. I mean, he's going to immediately walk into a chaotic situation and I mean, we'll see what happens from there. If I was the Buccaneers like that, that's not the basket I would want to be putting my eggs into. So,
yeah. What do you think about
Dicey situation? Like not even, and that's not even going into his, you know, his skill set and the things that he needs to get better and improve at. I mean, he's still the exact same guy that he has been since he was at Florida State. I don't know. I mean, that nothing's changed around him in Tampa Bay. So I don't know what you would expect to be different.
I found it kind of interesting that, you know, I was talking with Gene Clemens, who's worked with Football Game Plan and who's an offensive coordinator over at a high school where I grew up. And Gene was talking about Jameis and saying, you know, everyone gets on, you know, Jameis's case. He said the one thing he said is that everybody gets on Jameis's case for running, being inaccurate in the red zone. But a lot of his inaccuracy were on fade routes, and they were ironically to Mike Evans. And a lot of those plays, Mike Evans wasn't able to get separation and get to the spot where Winston was throwing. So it's interesting to me. I want to see how Mike Evans does this year, and I've kind of had it as a plan that I want to go back and watch some of these red zone work with Evans to see if I'm seeing what Gene mentioned, because I thought that was pretty interesting. And Gene was a pretty darn good wide receiver in college football, over at Pittsburgh State. So I'm kind of, I've trust what he has to say about a lot of things. So I want to see that. But what about Mariota? Cause you know, I retweeted a good thing this week or today about Mariota's footwork, and now he's going to have to rework some of that. And he's going to be in a much more timing oriented passing game. That's, you know, feet connected to the routes type of thing that you'd see from, you know, the Andy Reid's and, you know, the Petersons of the world and things like that. And you're going to see more of that in Tennessee. And, you know, I thought that the guy giving the analysis did a good job of saying, hey, look, there's going to be some growing pains here too. But you know, when you were writing for the RSP, you did a pretty darn good analysis of him. You know, what do you think the fact, you know, I saw him working on footwork this summer every day, and I'm thinking, I can't wait to see him in real game conditions because I want to see if that stuff sticks or whether he reverts to what he's been in the past.
Yeah. He's an interesting guy. Because he seems like he would be a coach's dream because he's going to do exactly what he's instructed to do and, you know, exactly what you teach him how to do. The conversation that we've always had with him is that he's a great extension of the coach in terms of being a manager and in terms of like when things don't go according to plan and he can't rely on that plan and his instruction is when, and he can't just run straight forward in a straight line and get positive yardage vertically, then, and that's when things kind of go haywire with him. And Him and Trubisky, I think, are two of like the are going to be the two most interesting test cases this year in terms of like what really is the market for these guys that we are calling like these hotshot young offensive minds that are just going to, I mean, completely change the way that NFL football is played by, you know, running shotgun and RPOs and stuff like that. So, I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, me personally, I still think that like Chicago and Tennessee's best plays are going to be inside handoffs to their running back. I think, I mean, Mariota's always been an efficient guy. That's, I mean, other than last year when things kind of just completely fell apart for him. He's always been an efficient guy. Like I said, he's not going to make a ton of mistakes, but he's always been a very robotic player. And I saw the little clip that you were talking about that you retweeted. And I mean, that's very accurate. He has not been asked to do a lot of things where he has to play with his eyes and his feet in concert. A lot of his stuff at Oregon and at Tennessee, like at Tennessee, they were exotic smash mouth, but when they weren't running play action, like they wanted to line up in the shotgun and have him catch and throw or shuffle his feet in the pocket until somebody came open, which is exactly what he did at Oregon. Like the Oregon pass game, people consider it a rhythm and timing passing game because like things happen very quickly. But in terms of like what people consider full field reads or like scanning what, like looking to one side of the field and being able to throw to the other, the difficult part about that is not so much about being able to read what the defense is doing. It's literally being able to turn and move your body and have your feet and your shoulders in coordination as you go. And you're basically turning your body all the way to a 45 degree angle and making a blind throw because you know the coverage isn't going to be there because of what you've already checked on the front side. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you have that, and all that has to be in concert. And that's not like, I'm not saying that he can't do it, but that's not something that he has ever been, that he has been asked to do at this point. And there, like you said, there will be growing pains. He seemingly has a great offensive coach with him now. That dude has pretty much the exact pedigree of what you would ask for in a young offensive coordinator, and seems to be like on the head coaching track. He was with the Rams. He was with Atlanta when Matt Ryan had his breakout year, and was like with Houston when Schaub and the Shanahans were there. So like I said, the pedigree is there. He's been with good coaching staffs. He's had good offenses. But at the end, like, at the end of the day, we'll see if, like I said, I'm very interested to see if the young hotshot offensive coordinator market goes bust. And Chicago is probably an even more interesting thing, and a more interesting test case, because I don't think that Trubisky is particularly good. And like I said, I think that people swear up and down that they're going to be running the Chiefs offense and the Philadelphia Eagles offense. And I think that their best play is going to be lining up in shotgun and running inside zone to Jordan Howard again. The only difference, they're going to be doing it from shotgun instead of from under center, like with John Fox. That'll be the only difference.
Wow. Well, that's too bad. So if that happens, that's going to be sad to see. But the only thing sad to see about this conversation is that at least this part of it's coming to an end. But on behalf of Eric Stoner and myself, I want to thank you for listening to this episode of the RSP Cast. And you can check out other RSP Cast episodes on iTunes or Stitcher, Google Play, as well as Blueberry under Matt Waldman's RSP Cast. You can also check out my site, www.mattwaldmanrsp.com. I've studied well over 50 skill players in anticipation of the 2019 rookie scouting portfolio, which most of you know is available every April 1st since 2006, and it pleasantly shocks new readers pretty much every year. So I encourage you to check that out at my site, www.mattwaldmanrsp.com, and see you next time.